Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Nerdy. It's a new month, Monday, February 1st, 2016, and I'm your host, Cara Santa Maria. This week is a fun chat with the Sci Babe herself, but before we dive in, I want to thank those of you who have made Talk Nerdy possible this week. First, via the PayPal portal, which you can access by visiting my website, carasantamaria.com. I want to thank Lawrence Yulk for your incredibly generous donation. And I also want to thank Nick Loyton from the UK. Thank you guys so much for your support. Over at Patreon, which you can access by visiting patreon.com/talknerdy, I want to thank a whole bunch of folks, Phil T-Bear, Timothy Glover, The Honorable Husband, quite like that one, Malcolm Waddy II, Gabriel Felipe Jaramillo Gonzalez, Ken Pfeiffer, Brian Holden, and last but not least, Jeffrey Sewell. Thank you so much for your support. If you're a new supporter, also thank you from the bottom of my heart if you've been supporting the show for quite a while now. Remember that there's a lot of ways that you can support Talk Nerdy to make sure that it continues to be free to download for everybody who's interested. You can visit my website, carasantamaria.com. You can shop in the Talk Nerdy store. You can rate and review on iTunes. You can say hello on Facebook and Twitter and even Instagram. I'm over there too. So stop in, say hi. Thanks again. All right, without any further ado, may I announce this week's guest. Her name is Yvette D'Entremont, and you may know her as the Sci Babe. Well, Yvette, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me on.
Why has this taken so long?
I just couldn't find my way across the 405
because
LA traffic is a thing.
Are you on the west side right now?
I'm actually in Burbank, so I was lying at the 405. That was like, bullshit.
Yeah, you had to cross the 101 to get
it's
to me.
It's 101, and I'm still going to blame LA traffic. That's it. So
I thought it would be fun to have you on because, of course, well, we met at TAM this year.
Yeah.
And we bonded and we hung out and I played with your puppy.
Played with my dog.
Yes,
yeah.
He was the best.
And your dog is adorable as well.
They could be friends.
They need to hang out.
They really do. So Killer and Buddy, right?
Killer and Buddy. It's going to be a match made in science dog heaven. My dog's nickname on the site is Science Dog.
Aww.
And the sad thing is he is the dumbest frigging dog
I was about
I've
to say.
Had.
Killer could never get that moniker because he's really stupid.
No, all he has is cute.
Uh-huh.
He has no smart to him. And I've talked to dog trainers about this before. I've asked when they've seen his behavior. They've all said the same thing. Aggressive dogs, easier to train out of aggression. Dogs that are like, what? What's mm-hmm. going on? That are just looking around the room when you're saying, sit, buddy, sit. But God damn. he cannot pay attention.
And yeah.
I got him as a stray and I got him from a shelter, just came with some bad behaviors that we've tried and he's gotten a little better, but I'm going to have to accept that I have a cute, stupid dog, but he's very sweet and he loves other dogs.
Well, that's, I think, even more important than a dog that sits when you ask him to. It's a dog that doesn't have any aggression
yeah.
and that's really cuddly.
And he gets along with my cats too.
Oh, that's great. Killer hated my cat. I had to basically give my cat to a new person, home.
It took 2 months because I had my cat first and it took 2 months until they finally got along and he gets along with my cat and he gets along with my boyfriend's cat is his best friend.
That's really cute.
They
cross species love going on.
They spoon. It's too much. So off the subject of our dogs.
Oh yeah. How much longer can we talk about our dogs?
Oh, we could talk about this for a while because it's dog people will sit there and talk about all their stupid little quirks until everyone's looking at us like really.
And anytime you want to show somebody something in your phone, you're like, oh, I took a picture of that architecture or whatever it is. Oh, I was at that place the other day. I took a picture. Hang on, and it's just dog.
It's like, and here he was queuing this cute thing, and here he was doing this cute thing and he did another cute he's lying in this
yeah.
look he made this face
and but here I took 17 pictures of him doing the same cute thing so I could find the best one.
Exactly.
So it's stupid.
My entire Instagram account is just pictures of my dog. I think the description on the Instagram account is here's where I'm going to be putting pictures of my dog.
Yeah. People love it too. That's the funny thing. They're like
Yeah, exactly.
Love the picture of your dog. Ugh. And so we met at TAM, yep. where I also met Buddy, hung out a bit. That's when it was first announced that I'd be joining the SGU.
And it's funny, I said to you before that announcement, I'm like, you'd make a great addition to it. And you're like, oh no. Coy.
It was so hard to lie that whole like weekend.
Because they were going to make the announcement.
We knew the announcement was coming and I had to keep it a secret until then. Yeah. And they invited me. You remember we were sitting together.
Yep, at dinner.
At the SGU dinner where they raise money and they do auctions and yep. there's all these things and play science or fiction.
It's so funny because on the SGU podcast, it's like a PG-13 podcast, and it was so funny to hear the Novella brothers saying the word fuck.
They say fuck all the time. It's so funny. They just want to be able to not have the explicit rating. Yeah. So either we just say fuck and poor Steve edits all of them out.
God.
Or we try to be mindful of not saying fuck and only saying shit.
And God knows I'm like, you heard me after we ended recording SGU, like the first thing they had in my mouth,
Yeah. And so. This, I decided early on with my podcast that like, you know,
just love
kids,
the language.
Yeah,
though.
It's like, fuck it. I can't control it. I really can't. But it was weird at that dinner because people would be coming to the table and saying, oh, do you think you're going to get a fifth host or a fifth rogue? When's the new rogue coming? They'd be like, well, you know, if the time is right. Meanwhile, we all know we're going to make the announcement the next day.
And you and Evan were sitting, I think, at the same table as me. And you guys are all like, yep, nothing.
Yeah, it's just crickets. Like trying to lie. And I'm a terrible liar. So I met you there. It was really fun. Found out that you live in LA. And then this week, actually today, we're recording this on a Saturday. It'll go live on Monday.
Yep.
We record SGU on Wednesdays and it goes live on Saturday. So very confusing. But today, Saturday, the January 30th, while we're recording this, SGU went live.
Oh, okay. So people are going to hear the
podcast.
And so
people are going to hear your interview today. And then I'll get to follow up with an interview on Monday. So if you haven't heard SGU this week, check it out. There may be a little bit of repetition just in terms of background, but it's fun to be able to dive deeper into a conversation. Yeah. So maybe let's start with what we kind of started talking about on SGU and then move on. How did you become Cybabe?
It started in a really on a rainy night in 1983 when I'm just kidding. Bad, really horrible thing.
Are we the same age?
We are. I Googled you because that's creepy.
I love it. So we're both born in 83?
83, yeah. I'm all of like 3 months older than you, July. So
nice. Were you class of 2001?
Class of 2001, yep.
Shut up. We would have been friends if we went to the same school.
I was the fat kid though, so maybe it would have picked on me. I don't think so.
Okay. I think good. We would have been friends.
Yay, we would have been besties. All right.
Something tells me you dyed your hair
I didn't smoke cigarettes.
Oh, maybe we wouldn't have been friends.
I would have, no, I was totally like, even like I was valedictorian, but I was also like, I was also in the theater. I was one of those theater freaks though. So
theater freaks
are
cool.
Yeah. It's like, that was my thing. Like I did that, but I also played sports because I liked volleyball.
Oh, so you were healthy. See, the theater freaks at my school were all on Coke.
Oh, okay. I went to a small school like with poor kids, so we couldn't afford Coke.
Gotcha.
Like if the theater kids did drugs, it was like pot. At best. And it's like I was a valedictorian who like smoked pot and had sex.
So, you know, we would have been sort of on the same page.
Like, you know, what I guess probably what people would expect from following my page.
So
we're going to skip forward a few years. So, you know, went to school I double majored in chemistry and theater because that totally makes sense.
You didn't know what you wanted. You wanted options.
I wanted to, you know, we already had Bill Nye, the science guy. I wanted to be Yvette, the science dudette because I was 17 and had big goals and they were totally all going to come true. And like, you know, then I got out into the world and realized nobody gave a shit about what a 21-year-old wanted to do with their life when they had no experience.
But the name rhymes.
Yeah, right?
It's so good.
But, you know, it's like, the funny thing was I got out and I kept like blogging and writing a little bit and my tiny little obscure blogs, you know, a few friends would follow them here or there. They're like, your writing's good. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not, you know, nobody cares about my little life. After I got my master's in forensics, I started kind of writing crime fiction for fun.
Oh, fun.
I started sending books off. The one and only book I wrote, I did write a full length novel in my mid 20s and started sending it to lit agents, and it wasn't, it obviously was not good enough to get published because it didn't get published.
Well, and fiction is really cutthroat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very. Yeah. And it's funny because, let's see. For a while, I let my writing go to the side. And then I started working at a pesticide company. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of when I found the whole skepticism thing. Like, it was around the same time that I started watching Penn and Teller's Bullshit. And I found this whole kind of community of people who were skeptics. Now, I know I'm jumping around in the story a bit. I'd gotten sick a few years before that, like really crazy, horribly sick. I got the worst headache of my life on one side of my head. Now, and whenever I tell the story, I ask people, what's the longest headache you've ever had?
I don't get headaches much. So I would say probably the worst would be maybe I went to sleep with a headache and it was still there in the morning and that really bummed me out. So probably 10 hours.
And that's, I mean,
headaches, that's bad.
Headaches are shitty. Like there's, and I mean, I never look at people and go, oh, you poor baby. When they say that they've had a bad headache, because they're a life ruiner. They're shitty. The first 8 months were kind of hell.
Oh my God.
Because like my doctors were trying really hard to figure out what combination of meds, what was wrong, why the scans weren't showing anything. And sometimes in my case, it was a trigeminal nerve headache. And it's just sometimes you have a nerve that just goes, I'm going to make your life suck. And for me, there's a rare congenital, whatchamacallit, a joint disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome that rarely will present with a headache.
Interesting.
So, I mean, everything blew for a while. Doctors weren't sure what was going on. And while I was working with my doctors, of course, I hunted through all these different health bloggers that were telling me, you need to go organic.
Oh,
everything everything in the food
just
is
killing you. Just take shark cartilage.
Exactly. Just go non-GMO.
And supplements. And supplements are good.
Exactly. And I mean, here's the thing. Because I was so desperate and I was in so much pain, like I was crying every day at work because of how much I was hurting. I was looking for anything.
Is very common when people are either very sick or when they're dying and they don't have any other options.
Oh, yeah. Like, so when I see people looking for alternative cancer cures or when I see people saying, you know, I have allergies, why are all these things happening to me, and they're looking for alternative health solutions, I'm sitting there going, my heart goes out to you because I was there. And when people call me a Monsanto shill, this makes me laugh because I found an old post of mine from like 2012, I think, saying, wow, these are all the brands that are supported by Monsanto. I can't buy any of them. Like I was there, you know?
Yeah.
And then eventually I started working at a pesticide company, and working there, I found how hard it was to get a pesticide to market, how much research went into it, how hard and how strict the science was. And I realized farmers loved it, what type of solutions we were giving to get food onto the market. And I mean, I realized this was not just we're poisoning people. Like there was science behind this, and it was real, and it wasn't what was hurting me. And also, you know, about a year or so before that, medicine fixed my headaches.
Yeah.
We'd gotten a combination of meds, of real, you know, horrible big pharma, had gotten my headaches under control.
So you found out, like you finally landed on a diagnosis,
yeah,
you found the right medication, and you started feeling better.
Yeah, feeling better will make you, you know, not hate big pharma and medicine so damn much. But like, it's, you know, 8 months of abject misery will make you a little desperate. And I'll never blame someone for going online and Googling. I want them to be a little smarter about it.
Well, and that's the real bummer. It's not the consumer who's culpable.
Yeah.
It's the marketer.
Exactly.
It's the individuals or the groups that are going out there and making things up out of whole cloth and taking advantage of, by the way, people who are at their most vulnerable.
Yeah. I look at them and go, you know what? It's not you who's wrong for going out there and seeking health solutions. Mm-hmm. Like, because when people, I look at it and go, when do people become anti-vaxxers? When do people become anti-GMO? It's when they're looking to become healthy. It's when they're Googling, are GMOs good or bad? And the first, I think, like when the first 10 Google results, out of those, maybe only two give you science-based answers. And that's horrible for somebody who just doesn't know. I mean, I think you're only required to take a science class up until the age of like 15 or 16, up until your sophomore year of high school. So somebody who's just, you know, a soccer mom in Illinois, how's she supposed to know?
And even if you did, I mean, in my experience, when I was teaching intro bio, like to college freshmen at a commuter school, kind of a low income commuter public university, my freshman biology students, oh my gosh, they had like, it's an elementary school biology background. Like, it was very rare for kids to come in, and when we're setting out to learn the fundamentals of biology, for them to have any sort of strong background at all. It's like the public school systems in many ways are failing us. So not only the kids who are taking the course, or the kids who never take the courses, but also the kids who are taking the courses, they're just not that prepared unless they opt to actually study science at an advanced level, which is a fraction of the public.
So, I mean, teaching, I think sometimes not just teaching kids, here are the facts you need to know to pass the test, but teaching them how to be critical thinkers of things that they see on social media and teaching them to be critical of just things that are presented. Ask why, ask where did this information come from is so important. So, you know, fast forward a few years ahead to working at the pesticide lab, and I keep seeing this person, the food babe, who gave me all this horrible information when I was sick. And I just...
And you listened to her when you were sick.
Yeah.
You were oh, she knows her shit.
It's, I saw it and I'm like, I was sick. And here's the thing. She started her whole journey off by having a case of appendicitis that she was sure happened because of all the toxic food.
Yeah.
That's not how any of this works. Yeah. So I remember I looked back through my old Facebook posts just a couple days ago to see what my, you know, what my Facebook history was like before I started it. Because this all started with me just starting a Facebook page, which is why I say, look, if you have a point of view, go out and start a Facebook page.
Yeah.
Start communicating. If you have the science, if you have the knowledge, don't let the alternative health people who don't have the information control the conversation. Get involved. Because I looked at
it's
it, I'm
free.
Like,
it is exactly. free to write a blog, to have a Twitter handle, to start a Facebook page, and to have your voice be heard. And if your points are solid and your writing is entertaining, people will listen and they'll start sharing it.
And that was what was crazy to me. It was sudden, like, I think I had within the first 48 hours, I had 1,000 followers. And that was, I was like, what? people are listening to me. I'm just kind of a goofball.
Isn't it funny too when that happens where you're like, I don't know 1,000 people. Like, you think about that number and you're like, I can't list 1,000 people that I know.
It's, I'm like, how do 1,000 people like this? It was nuts, but I just started it one night, and within like clockwork, 1,000 more people were showing up every single week to the site for the first 7 months. And I'm like, I don't know what those numbers are like compared to other blogs, but it seemed pretty good. And it's like, I kept trying, like, and I was pretty obsessive over it the first handful of months. I would go home every weekend, write a blog on Sunday, and put it up Monday morning. And it was like, okay, let's debunk either a different idea or a different blogger every week. And then, you know, and it was doing pretty well. Then, and this is kind of the story that everyone knows. In April, this wonderful editor at Gawker, Leah Finnegan, who I now work with basically wherever she edits, sent me an email. And the first line of it was, I love you even more than I hate the food, babe. That still makes me laugh. And she's like, can you write, you know, an all-inclusive piece? You know, whatever. And I think she was, the first idea was, you know, 10 reasons why she's the worst. And I went through 10 things about her. And I mean, the thing is, we could have written 50 things because there's so much about her that was wrong. And I think the reason why we stuck on the food babe as compared to, there are so many other charlatans out there, but the reason it was her is because she kept getting into mainstream media. Because like, there's Mercola, there's Dr. Mercola, there's Mike Adams, there's David Avocado Wolf, who all have really strong online presence. But she was on CNN talking about ways to be healthy. She was on Yahoo Health, and Yahoo is like the number 5 ranked website on the world. And she's telling people, she had a tweet once that said, did you know the flu shot is a tool of genocide?
Jesus.
Oh, it's my like God.
When, I mean, when I was at HuffPost and we started a science page, the reason we felt the need to do it is because before a science page existed, there were health pages and there were green pages and there were whatever pages, but like you would read Deepak Chopra on the health pages and you would be like, there's no distinction here between what's evidence-based and what's based on, like, the feels.
And now Rachel Parent, one of the teenager who's an anti-GMO activist, has her own little blog at HuffPo. And I'm like, oh, how... This has changed a little bit, hasn't it?
Totally. And so. I think the important thing there is that you're always going to find this. You're going to find it at The Guardian. You're going to find it at HuffPost or the, you know, lots of people will denigrate and call it, like, all sorts of other names.
Yeah.
But the important thing is that if you make a decision, that you call something science, then it has a different bar.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, you have to back this shit up. Mm-hmm. So it's the reason that it was Food Babe was because, okay, if this is being presented to people as
health advice,
as accurate information about what they're supposed to eat, how they're supposed to fuel themselves, fine, she can do this, but we're going to tell people why it's wrong. And there had been a lot of other articles, very well-written articles by other journalists who I respect a lot, by other science bloggers. And I love all the things that David Gorski in particular mm-hmm. had written about her. And I used it as resources and I thanked him for it.
Yeah.
But they hadn't quite broken through. And I think it was part of the problem, especially with the ones written in mainstream media, is they had to play to that false balance. They had to say, you know, is she a fearmonger? Some scientists speak out. And it's like, and I mean, I feel for the journalists that wrote that way. And a couple of them had spoken to me saying, I love that you got to write like this. I couldn't because of, you know,
because I was writing journalism. Like I wasn't able to write an op-ed.
Yeah.
And that's two different things. Like, not that op-eds aren't journalism. Yeah. They are. But if you're reporting and you're trying to write a reported piece, you're not allowed to put opinion in it.
Yeah. They weren't allowed to say. Yeah. And it's like the problem is that they could say, here are the scientists that support her. Here are the scientists that don't. It's like, no, 99.9% of scientists, the scientific consensus says she's full of shit. These three scientists who've gone off grid like her. And there's a huge difference. And it was unfortunate that so many articles didn't put it that way. And that's why they didn't, I think that's why they didn't make as much of a difference. Or maybe it's just that we swore in the headline.
Well, that's
who
what
knows?
I was going to say too. Also, you're funny. And like, I know it sounds crazy, but like, helps. It has to be entertaining first.
Exactly.
Most people don't read like periodicals, you know, like we're not talking textbooks here. We're talking magazines. We're talking clickbait on Twitter. Like, most people don't read that shit because it's really informative. They read it because they're bored and they want to be entertained. Yep. And then it's like, ooh, you got to sneak a bunch of information into it.
Exactly.
That's the important approach.
I'm like, if I can sneak in some science while I'm making you laugh your tits off, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's kind of been my approach. I'm like, if I can, I have to get a joke in every paragraph because I know it's going to make people keep reading. And it's a working formula so far. If one day people get tired of my sense of humor, fine. But for now, I'm going to make people read as much science as I possibly can with a side of dick jokes.
It's so the right thing to do. And I find it in TV all the time when you talk to people who have never worked in television or film and especially like my colleagues, like people I love and respect on the science side who have never done much in entertainment, and they're like on the war path of why don't movies do this and why don't TV shows do this, and it's kind of like, because nobody would watch that.
Yeah,
that would be so boring.
There was an article that I read recently saying the problem with journalism is you need to have an audience.
Yeah,
and it's like
people have to actually read your work.
Yes, and it's like, and I look at other science writers sometimes who are like, I just wrote this great article. Is it the Facebook algorithm? I'm like, are you sure it's a great article?
Exactly.
It's like I'm like, look, you put it with facts up to up your ass, but did you make an ass joke anymore?
Yeah.
Like,
and
you
it's
know,
like, I don't understand your article. Yeah. That's like, not very helpful.
Yeah. It's like the biggest thing that I try to do, and this is something I'll say to any brand new science communicator. And I gave a talk at UMass a couple months ago. And someone was like, I really want to start blogging about what I'm doing. And he started telling me about it. And I was not familiar with his field of science. He was doing cellular research. And he gave me this really long sentence with a lot of really big words that I'd never heard because I had not done his type of research. I'm like, you need to break it down further. He's like, how? I'm like, say it like you're saying it to a smart, interested 14-year-old who had never stepped foot in your laboratory. He's like, okay, sometimes cells have different moods. I'm like, there, that's English.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant.
I'm like, you have to say it in English, not the language you would use for a PhD who has been in this laboratory every day for their entire life. You can't use the same language in the lab, and it's not dumbing it down, it's changing the language.
And I so appreciate that you make that distinction.
Yeah,
because very few people do. That's when I give talks, I always say the same thing: never underestimate the intelligence of your audience, but always underestimate their vocabulary.
Yes,
they don't know the words you use. Yeah. The same way, if I were to talk to my plumber and my plumber started using all of the specific L joints and things, and I don't know,
exactly.
I would be like, I have no idea what you're talking about, dude.
Yes.
Explain my toilet in a way that I can understand it, because I don't know what all those words mean.
Exactly. And it's funny because I've said before, I've used the exact example of plumbers before. I'm like, sometimes people say scientists and non-scientists. We don't say plumbers and non-plumbers.
I know.
Like, it's I always like to say anyone, you know, most, a vast majority of people can understand what we're doing. Don't assume that your audience is dumber than you. Mm-hmm. Don't assume that your audience can't understand your subjects. I always like to assume that my audience can understand everything that I understand. I just need to say it in a way that they can understand it. And that's what makes a good science communicator.
Yeah,
and
I think if they don't get it, it's not on them. It's on you. Yeah.
You didn't explain it well enough. Yep. So it's like, explain it in a way that is going to make them, that's going to engage them, and it's going to be, and just change the language. Mm-hmm. Change the language and make them laugh.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that you are very solid at doing that. And I appreciate that you do that. I'm interested to know, I mean, you mentioned why it started with the food babe.
Yeah.
When we talk about skepticism in general, which is an interesting world, right?
Oh, yeah.
That we both we both have our toes dipped into. I'm not, I don't feel like I'm swimming in it fully. I'm not sure if you do.
I feel like I'm up to my eyebrows.
You do. Okay, cool. I feel like I get it and I'm on the outskirts. And, you know, now that I'm on SGU, I think I see more of it firsthand.
Yeah.
But I definitely, Steve and Jay and Bob and Evan always reinforce to me, because I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know who that person is. Or I'm sorry, I don't know the background story. And they're like, that's what we like about you. Like, you're not entrenched in this world like we are, which I appreciate. You might be a little more entrenched.
Yeah.
But that being said, skepticism is an umbrella for basically a movement that is evidence-based thinking, scientific thinking in almost every arena, right?
Yeah.
Especially the arenas where there is evidence to back it up.
And it's very promoting questioning of things. It's like, there are no sacred cows, question all the things.
Totally.
And I kind of enjoy that. I do think that sometimes, and this is kind of a little bit of a detriment to skepticism, it does kind of promote people being dicks at times.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. And it's kind of why I appreciated Phil Plait's talk a few years ago saying, don't be a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it is fortunate that we're people who say question everything, don't take anything for granted, and demand evidence, because in a lot of cases, your life, your health, your wallet depend on it. But it does promote people to say, I want a dogma. I want to know what's black and white and what's the answer. And we're always getting new evidence on things. And I think sometimes when people want a dogma in place for things and they want the evidence that they have to just stay stable, it does at times make people discount new evidence.
Yeah,
and
oh,
it's
for sure.
Unfortunate. Like, I know here's a good example that came up recently. I'm friends with science writer Tara Hale, and I really like her work. It's nuanced. It takes into account new evidence, and it'll say sometimes we have this new study, and it warrants from this new study. It means that we, it's not comprehensive, but it means we should look into something further.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes skeptics, because they said, but we liked this thing we had before with all this other evidence, it'll discount that. And I'm like, sometimes we're being a little too dogmatic, and I think that's not, I think that's not great for skepticism overall. It's like, maybe, I hate using this term, maybe skeptics should be a little more open-minded new evidence.
Because
that's science.
Yes, I think that the definite, I used to teach this when I taught, again, my freshman, and it was like, what is the definition of a scientist? It's somebody who is simultaneously skeptical and open-minded, which sounds like they are opposing things to be, but they're not.
They're perfect. It's perfect.
You have to be both.
It's like, what's the phrase? Just don't be so open-minded that your head falls out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think the study in question was something about, what was it? It was something, because she was researching childbirth type things, and it was, I'm trying to think. It'll come to me eventually. But like, she got jumped on by a few other people within the community because they were like, "This isn't evidence based," and it was like, "But no,
that's a study."
But it was a study, and she didn't,
like, that's anecdotal. It's like, yeah, there will be more eventually.
Yeah.
Like, it's incremental information. It's still good to report on incremental findings.
Yeah, and I think it was something with home births. Now, here's the thing: home births not perfect. Like, there's a lot of evidence saying that they're not as good as hospital births. True. I think if you had just no other information about a birth, go with the hospital. Birth.
Sure.
I think the article she wrote said, if it is your second birth and your first one, your first one went completely uneventfully, it was a textbook case, your second pregnancy went completely according to plan, and you live within 10 minutes of a hospital in a low traffic area, and you can get there in case of emergency, and you have, not just a doula, but a medical professional there. She said, yes,
and they found no significant difference between the
exactly.
health of the babies.
And it's, here's the thing, it's situational. She wasn't saying, she wasn't saying, and people started accusing her of being a crunchy mother. And she's like, I think that we need to, like, as Phil Plait said, take the dickery down a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, don't jump on someone as soon as you hear they might have an idea that's different than yours, because there might be evidence behind it. Look into the new evidence.
How is it helpful to just call people names?
Yes.
And it's not me saying like, oh, I'm a sensitive woman yeah. and my sensitive lady parts can't handle it. It's more just like, that's not a constructive way to argue with somebody.
Exactly. It's like, if there's new evidence, it means that maybe you'll learn something new. It's like, let yourself be challenged. Mm-hmm. And I think being challenged is the way that you learn things. It's the way that you get new insights. And I think that's wonderful. Every once in a while, I love being proven wrong.
Oh, me too. It's hard. Like, you have to sit back for a second and go, fuck, but you're right. I misspoke there, or I hadn't read that article and I didn't realize
we've gone back and forth on the gluten intolerance thing twice now. First, gluten intolerance was a thing. It was a poorly designed study. They went back and redesigned the study and found that it was FODMAPs, these short chain carbohydrates that were actually giving people the stomach discomfort. And then they said, okay, fine, gluten intolerance isn't a thing. Now there is a more recent study, and it's preliminary, but they're going to look more into it, that there is a protein in some people's stomach that does give them a discomfort based on if they ingest gluten. It needs more study, but there's a chance that gluten intolerance is a thing after all.
So, beyond celiac disease.
I have celiac disease, so I'm not just a fussy asshole who lives in LA with an affectation. I really can't eat the stuff that really tastes delicious.
Yeah, I have a friend who has celiac.
And it's,
we call her a glutard. Is that bad?
I don't know. It's funny because I met one other guy who called himself that, and right afterwards I saw him drinking a beer and eating something that I couldn't eat. I'm like, you jerk.
No, she actually can't. I feel horrible. Kind of like that's probably not a very nice thing to call. I don't know
what the rules are.
What's PC and what's not. I don't know.
I'm not gonna be the language police.
Exactly.
But oh man.
It is sad when she's like, I can't eat that. Like, I'm like, do you want this cake? And she's like, don't, you bitch. I can't eat cake.
The funny thing is, people treat, because of, it's a double-edged sword that people went fucking nuts on the gluten, because now I can occasionally find a decent cookie, but at my last job, I had a coworker who, this was great. He was like, you can't even have a little cake. But this is great. He was, I'm not going to say which religion he was, but there were certain products he wouldn't eat.
Yeah.
And I made fudge, and one of the ingredients was marshmallows, which is derived from pork. And after he took a piece, he asked what the ingredients were because he wanted to make it. And I said it was marshmallows. He got so mad at me. And I'm like, wait, you keep pushing things on me that will give me stomach cancer eventually. And you got mad because of a thing you arbitrarily choose not to eat because the invisible man in the sky is, it was ridiculous. But
we all have those weird, like, it's, we try not to, right? That's kind of the goal of being a skeptic, is to not have those weird hangups. But we all have them. It's about being really honest with ourselves and exploring where they are. You know, my boyfriend can't eat dairy. He can't eat dairy at all. It makes him brutally sick.
And it's
one of those things where, just like you were saying about the gluten thing, it's a double-edged sword because it's not evidence-based at all that people are like, oh, I'm gluten-free. It just makes me feel a little clearer in my mind. But at the same time, he can eat. He'll buy vegan versions of things. He's not vegan, but he knows there's no dairy in it.
Oh.
So if he buys something vegan, like when we go to restaurants in LA, it's so funny. He'll be like, I want the vegan quesadilla, add meat. You know, because he loves meat. He just can't eat cheese or butter or any of the other things. So it's actually helpful that veganism is such a trend, because there are vegan versions of all these foods. I can make a Thanksgiving pie for him because I can find vegan cream cheese and vegan pie crust, which is kind of great. But at the same time, it's because there's like a bunch of crunchy idiots who are like, oh, I'm totally vegan. Which I shouldn't say they're idiots, because the truth is, I totally get the I understand the viewpoint of, I don't want to eat meat or animal products for ideological reasons.
Yeah, I understand the ideology.
I get it. I don't get it when people are like, it's just not healthy for people to eat beef. I'm like, yes, it is.
It's fine.
We are not vegetarians by nature.
I look at it and go, you know what? If you don't want to eat animal products, don't eat animal products.
Yeah, we're at a place where science has solved that problem. Like, if you make the right decisions, you can get enough protein and you can work it out.
You can be healthy doing one or the other. It's funny because one of the things I've noticed in the trend in both alt health and in, you know, regular old health is, you know, people are trying to figure out what's the perfect diet. What's the one perfect diet that's going to solve it for everyone? And the only conclusion I can come to, there's no one perfect diet.
The perfect diet is variety.
Yeah. It's like,
which is so frustrating. Like, it's like, what can I eat? Like, I've always felt that way because I don't love food. I'm not a foodie. I'm one of those people who eats to live. I don't live to eat.
Yeah.
And if they made people kibble, I would be so happy.
They're Soylent.
They're Soylent.
It tastes horrible.
And
though.
It's a liquid. And it's like, can't.
I tried it once. No, some people, I shouldn't speak ill of it, like, because some people really like it. I found the taste disturbing.
I also, it's not that good for you if you actually want to maintain a healthy weight, because it's like
really?
A shitload of calories.
Wow.
Yeah. Soylent, I think it's like 3,000 calories a day,
oh my
maybe 2,500. Huh. And like, if you're trying to do something restricted, like 1,800 so you can lose weight, like you have to drink less Soylent. Yeah.
Oh,
I would love an oatmeal, some sort of whole oatmeal that has all of the nutrition that you need in it, but it's warm and it's like filling.
Just have oatmeal and whatchamacallit and oranges and you'll be fine.
Yeah, and that's all I'll eat forever. And then I'll fucking get really sick probably because I'll be missing all sorts of like essential vitamins.
Man,
the problem.
I used to be really, really fat. So it's, of course, I loved food, but I mean, I still like food. I'm a little smaller and eat a little less of it. But
that's important. It's like probably portion control.
Yes.
Is like the number one.
Don't eat too much. Move occasionally. It's a good
combination. The hard thing is people want there to be an easy answer. If I eat A, B, C, D, E, and F every day, then I'll be as healthy as I possibly, which is why people are like, okay, I always eat a kale salad that has superfoods like blueberries and cranberries. And you're like, okay, yeah, those are nutritionally dense foods.
Yeah.
Like, there's no argument against that. But like, you also need the grains from this,
yes.
And you also need the essential fatty acids from that.
Yeah.
And
there's no one. And I mean, it's funny because like, I remember when articles came out about Michael. I always love using Michael Phelps as an example.
The swimmer. Yeah, okay.
Because he was
pothead swimmer.
Oh, it's and he can hang with me anytime.
Yeah.
We live in California. That shit rocks.
That's
moving
true.
On.
It's legal here.
Exactly. But he was eating like 14,000 calories a day, and it was pizza and it was subs. And there was somebody who said, "Well, how much better would he be if he was eating kale?" And I'm like, "He's already broken every single." record there is. How much better? Like, I'm like, you go and beat him at a swim after you eat your kale salad. He needs calories.
Yeah, there's a reason he's calorie loading, because he's fucking working harder than any other human being
on
the planet.
I'm like,
he's burning them all.
Yeah, go ahead and tell me he needs a salad before his next 7-mile swim.
Can you imagine how much kale salad you would have to eat to get like 14,000 calories?
How much gas would you have?
I know. Oh, God.
He would just the pool would just have like a film of green,
you'd be eating
poop.
Out of like a fish tank every day. Like, you wouldn't be able to.
He would burn more calories chewing than anything else.
He would. He'd be like, oh my God, it's like negative calories.
It's
so
crazy.
Frustrating.
Like, it's, but I mean, he fueled the exact way he needed to do what he was doing. A sedentary secretary who needs to lose 50 pounds should eat differently than Michael Phelps. And that's perfectly fine.
And
so,
Michael Phelps, I'm pretty sure he probably has some of the top nutritionists and scientists
yes.
helping him come up with his diet.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there are some people, you know, measuring every
yeah.
last caloric load that's happening there. So, I mean, like, I look at it and go, there are foods that are healthier than others. And I hate using that word healthy.
Yeah,
because like,
that's almost kind of an arbitrary distinction.
Yeah, it's like, there are foods that you probably should eat less often, eat more often. You should probably move your ass a couple times a week at least, you know, because it's good for your heart and good for your lungs. And like, you know, it's when I look at getting sick long term, some things are genetic, some things are based on behaviors. Don't smoke, don't tan too often.
Yeah.
And you know, some things are up to luck.
And also live your life, man.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of people who like kale. Kale is good for you. You know what I mean? It's nutritionally dense.
Yes.
Let's put it that way. It's something where you don't have to eat. You can eat something that doesn't have a heavy caloric load, especially if you're trying to lose weight, but it gives you a lot of nutrition, a lot of micronutrients that you need in in your life. Unlike myself, who eats fucking meat and potatoes every day, which is like horrible.
If I could do that and look like you, God damn it. Good for you.
Well,
enjoy it.
Lately I've been wearing real baggy clothes for a reason.
It's okay. Lately I've finally been putting in a concerted effort. I decided this year I was going to learn how to twerk. That's
nice.
my goal this year.
That's your workout?
It's
a twerk? work?
I'm working on it. I'm still really bad at it. every third time I get the rhythm down, and then I'm like, oh, I remember how I this is bad.
You gotta start by not twerking in the mirror, probably.
I downloaded Lexi Pantera's app that, you know, shows you all the different types of twerking.
That's hilarious that exists. Yeah.
I have an app to help me twerk. But I promise.
That's like the definition of a nerd, by the way.
Oh yeah, I have an app for twerking.
You're researching twerking.
It's funny because I'm trying. Once I have it down, I'm gonna write an article on it.
That's amazing.
It's totally gonna happen. But I think mostly because people are gonna laugh their tits off at it.
But
my main thing is rock climbing, and I love it because it's a very kind of nerdy thing to do. Because you have to look. They have, you know, different levels of climbing. They have some things that like just look like ladders, basically, and then they have some things that are tiny little holds. I used to be a distance runner. I've run a few marathons, and then I ran one with a torn labrum in my hip, and now I can't run anymore.
That sucks.
So, rock climbing is great because it's a whole body workout. You really have to challenge your upper body, and so I've started trying to do, you know, more weights and whatnot. And weights burn calories like crazy.
You have to weight train.
Oh,
you can't just do cardio. So many girls just do cardio and they don't lift weights.
Here's the thing: you might see the numbers on the scale go up, but it's because you're building muscle and it's fine.
You look hot.
Oh yeah.
It's like, stop looking at the scale. Look at yourself in the mirror and be like, ooh, I look good.
Oh yeah. And it's like, I've lost a little weight just since I've started weight training. I've lost just a tiny bit of weight, but my proportions look better. I'm climbing so much better.
You're stronger.
Like just the amount better, like climbing got noticeably easier just with a few weeks of weight training. And I'm like, this is great. So, you know, get out and move. It's good for your body. Good for your overall health. Will help with bone strength.
And you get to be a nerd about it. Cause like nerds love gear.
Oh yeah.
Right. So any like sport or any endeavor where you get to like totally geek out and buy a bunch of fun gear.
Oh yeah.
I think is like a good motivator.
And whatchamacallit, summertime, and we live in LA. There are so many places where you can go out and go rock climbing outside, like Joshua Tree. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
So,
and I feel the same way more about like running and hiking. Like I really like running, and I'm not a long distance runner at all. But I like to go on runs, and I got really into it last year and have tried to continue this past month has been really hard, but it's fun too because I get to go shopping and buy like cool really cute pants,
I loved running gear like when I was a runner. Oh my god, I had, don't even ask how many pairs of shoes I had. I could justify it because I was running
one pair
marathons.
I'm really weird. I buy one pair of shoes until they're not solid anymore, and then I go buy another pair, and I keep buying the same pair over and over because I really like them.
I blame Runner's World for this because they would
is the best.
Some of the coaches I knew would say, well, your shoes deflate after you've worn them for one day, and they take 3 days to go back up, so you need three I'm sitting
so and like rotating
in
your
retrospect shoes. And it's funny because the nutty race I did was this race called the Goofy, and you did a half marathon one day and a marathon the next.
Why?
Because I'm an idiot.
Insane.
That's the race that destroyed my life. Like, it was
Jesus, that sounds horrifying.
And I got my best times ever on both those races, and I knew I was going to do it for the half, but the whole, I broke my previous time by 26 seconds for a marathon.
I don't know how people run marathons.
It's
makes me want to die.
A large dose of masochism. And it was funny, my first marathon, I remember thinking at the halfway mark, I'm like, all I have to do is run another half marathon. Why the fuck did I do this? What was I thinking? I'm going to die. Why? It was nothing compared to the Goofy. Because I felt fine the entire first marathon I did. When I did the Goofy, though, I was really injured by the time I did it. Doing the marathon, because you got three medals for the Goofy. It's at Disney, and so you're running through the Disney parks.
Fun.
It's so much fun, but I was so injured, and I didn't realize how bad it was going to be until I'd done the actual race. I got to the halfway point of the marathon, and I'd run 13 miles the day before. At this point, I'm up to 26 miles, and I'm thinking, if I just drop out here, will they give me one of the medals? And just I
should get two out of the three, right?
They gave you one for one race, one for the next, and then they gave you the goofy medal, because to run 39 miles in 2 days, you have to be
goofy.
A little goofy.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha, bad joke.
True.
Yeah. And at the end of it, it was just I saw that I'd broken my previous time, and I collapsed, and they had to strap ice to my quads, and I started crying because I realized I'd broken my time, and it was like, it's I'll never do. I mean, I physically can't because I have arthritis in my hip now from it. Like, yeah. I miss running. Like, I miss a limb. Like, it's when you find something that makes you that happy physically. Like, it's just it's hard to say goodbye to it. You know,
which most people listening, well, some people listening who run and who like it are like, yeah, and other people are like, you're fucking crazy.
Oh yeah, I know this sounds crazy. Like the last training run I had before that race was a 12-mile training run. It was just, you know, that was my long run for the week. And it seemed like a short run.
I don't know
how crazy is that?
When I go on a run, I run about 3 to 5 miles. Yeah. And that to me is like brutal. Like that's enough for me to be like, man, I got a good workout.
If I killed myself right now, I could probably only run 2 miles. Yeah. Like, I mean, now I cycle and do yoga. And it's funny thinking of me doing yoga because I joke that it's a hippie thing now. And I love it. It's great workout.
I used to do atheist yoga.
Atheist yoga.
Yeah, I knew a girl. who was a yoga instructor, and so she would, my ex-boyfriend and I were like hardcore atheists together, and she would come and give us atheist yoga lessons. We were like, I don't want to hear anything about no fucking chakras. And so it was, we would do all the moves, God. But she wouldn't like say all the bullshit and that they sometimes
and this will align your back, not your chakras.
Exactly.
It was funny, my current boyfriend, he's the one that introduced me to yoga, because he's like you'll like the instructor. She calls it jaded New Yorker yoga.
I love that. That's so perfect.
She's great.
It's like when they're like, now pigeon pose is really good because it might help keep your hips from, like, it'll help you from breaking your hips when you're older, and you're like, oh, that's important.
Yeah,
not like it'll help you deliver God into your thighs. Oh, yeah. Or, you she's, know, and you're like, she's what like, are you talking about?
Oh yeah, she's like, I'm not going to tell you whether or not this is. She's like, I'm not going to. And it's at my boyfriend's college. She was doing this as a course each semester, and she's like, I'm not going to do your spiritual guru stuff. I'm going to try to help you feel this out, and we're going to play in the space a bit, and like the only thing they would do is start with an om and an om, you know, and end with an om and a namaste. I'm like,
yeah, namaste. That's fine.
That's about as much as I could deal with. It was funny. Speaking of chakras, this is great. I was when my first video went a little viral. I only had 10,000 followers at the time. I'd done a video. I pulled a James Randi down the bottle of homeopathic sleeping pills, and shocking, I lived.
Yeah, and you didn't sleep.
I know. Well, I slept eventually, but I think that was due to natural circadian rhythms, not due to the giant bottle of sleeping pills. But moving on, a show invited me to come on. It was a daytime medical talk show that I can't, you know, name aloud because I. Because they never aired the clip. We're going to call it the Schmockters. They never aired the clip.
Was that because you pissed them off?
I think it's because I didn't back down when they were really mean to me.
Oh my God, tell me everything.
Like I said, we're going to call it the Schmockters. So at first they asked, you know, and the producers, when they invited me on, I think I'm allowed to talk about this because it's the Schmockters. It's a fake show.
It's totally a fake show.
Never happened.
Yeah.
But the lead Schmockter, who was on a show called The Schmatchler, he first starts by asking me, so what was your goal with this? And they only show a tiny clip of the video, not the whole thing. And they make it sound like I was very reckless when I did this.
They like produced in such a way that it was like really dangerous.
Oh yeah. I dangerously just downed a giant bottle of Tylenol PM. I'm like, well, to inform, and I said, you know, to inform consumers and make sure that people are thinking about what they're buying and reading labels. And then the Schmockter, who looks at lady parts, looks at me and goes, I bet you don't believe in chakras either. I'm like,
and you're like, you're a Schmockter.
You're a Schmockter. I'm like, you examine people who are having babies for a living. Like, don't. I'm like, I don't want you aligning my chakras when you're checking to see if I have cervical cancer
or something.
Yeah. So that was my experience. It was horrible.
Oh my
and
God.
I was not shocked at all when I wasn't invited back on. Now, a few months later, the food babe was on the Schmockters.
Of course. So now you know.
I was not shocked at all.
Speaking though of the food babe, or wait, you were about to say something. I feel bad.
Oh no, that's okay, don't worry.
No, where were you going?
She was on there and I was like, oh, they cut my clip and they kept her. I was so angry.
But that tells you something about the Schmockter show.
The Schmockter show.
Same with like Dr. Oz, which we can say because neither of us has been on that show. This is a huge problem. It's giving a platform, Oprah too,
yeah.
Terrible, giving a platform to individuals
oh, yeah.
that are charlatans, that are hucksters, yeah, that are making money off of people's pain.
It's, well, here's the thing. They like saying that these people give people hope. No, they're giving them false hope. Yeah. False hope is dangerous and horrible. And do you remember the story of Kim Tinkham? Mm-mm. The one who, like, right after Oprah had talked about the book The Secret.
Oh, fuck The Secret.
Fuck The Fucking Secret.
The Secret is the worst.
The only problem with saying fuck The Fucking Secret is that I haven't said the word fuck enough in the sentence. It's horrible. So Kim Tinkham had, and this is a horrible story, and I'm not bringing this up to insult Kim. I feel horribly, this is a tragic story that needs to never happen again.
Was she a victim?
Yeah, she had breast cancer, and they caught it early enough that this probably would have been treated. She'd read the book The Secret and thought that this could be
willed away,
and she sought out Robert O. Young, who it seems like he got his medical degree through Diploma Mills, and he's the one that was doing like the live blood analysis and was like, oh, we're looking at your blood and it's acidic. He does the pH miracle living thing.
No. All the like eat for your blood type, all that bullshit.
It's like... And she, Kim Tinkham, after a few years of saying, I'm going to think the cancer away, of course, tragically died.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on Oprah. Why didn't
she? She was on Oprah while she was thinking the cancer away.
She was on Oprah saying, I'm going to think the cancer away because I read The Secret. And I'm like, why didn't Oprah look at her and say, get your ass back into a hospital. This is bullshit. I'm sorry for ever giving you The Secret. This is horrible.
And why didn't any of the producers on the show, why didn't anybody who had any power stand up and say, I don't feel right about this?
And I mean, I look at this and I'm not mad at Kim. She's a victim in this.
Everyone was sold this rhetoric, hook, line, and sinker.
Everybody there, from her husband to Robert O. Young to fucking Oprah, failed her. Mm-hmm. Oprah failed this woman. And it's like, it makes me so beyond words angry. Every single time someone is given an unproven cancer cure and they die from it, and then they go, oh, they lived their truth. No, they're dead.
Yeah,
they're dead. And we could, and proven cures could have at least been tried and helped these people out. And it's horrifying to me.
I mean, it's sad what happened to Steve Jobs, but it's a good example for a lot of people to look at. It's this Hollywood plague that we have here on the, what we call the best coast, of individuals who basically are surrounded by this echo chamber, I think, of alternative medicine and alternative cures, and big pharma is evil and it's a big conspiracy.
Cancer, try green juice.
Yeah. It's like, no, if you have cancer, try the one thing that doctors, and when I say the one thing, there's so many things now, you know, depending on your cancer, there's chemotherapy, there's radiation, there's new immunotherapies that are happening all the time.
There are even some
pills
now that don't make you lose your hair, that keep it, you know, that are tumor suppressors. There are different ways we can do this now. But the best thing I'll hear is doctors don't know anything. Oh, an unproven blog that you've never heard of with somebody that's never been to medical school knows more than this doctor then just by innate thinking. Bullshit.
It's crazy.
No, it's horrifying. And of course, it's funny, the Food Babe had a little thing on her website saying which cancer treatment she approved of, and one of them was Gerson therapy. It's the coffee enema and 13 glasses of green juice. Oh yeah, coffee enemas.
That's so dangerous.
They detox your liver.
No, they don't.
Exactly. Oh yeah.
Like anybody with basic understanding of biology would know that you can't take a coffee enema.
But as you said, how many people have a basic understanding of biology?
So we're talking about the Food Babe. The Food Babe has been a target in your writing for quite a while because you see her as being dangerous, and you see her as somebody who basically is on a trajectory that is worrisome.
Yeah.
Let's tell me a little more about her, because as a skeptic who basically my focus in skepticism, and I was going to bring this up earlier, my focus in skepticism is more about like pseudo journalism and trying to make sure that when a science story is published, that it's given a fair sort of description and what's the word I'm looking for?
It's
like given a fair translation, right? And it's not overhyped. Steve, for example, his focus, because he is a neurologist, is on evidence-based medicine. I dabble in that because of my biology background. Bob's focus is oftentimes on physics and cosmology.
Yeah.
You know, so we have different angles. A big part of the skeptic community, too, what I find is a part that I'm actually less interested in, which is like debunking like Bigfoot and shit and like UFOs, which to me is
I look at that and go, really?
I know. I'm like, we've solved this problem. Like at this point, like burden of proof is on the other side. Like I could give a shit, but I get it. It's important for skeptics, and it's
I look at that and go, okay, I'll believe, like, when a UFO finally lands, we're going to find out about it, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, it's like, we don't have to, every time there's some big claim about, you know, whatever, but, like, psychics and mystics are getting closer to that field that I'm interested in, yeah. homeopathy, all of that. So what is it about Food Babe, A, that resonates so much with you, and B, tell me a little more about her, and, like, what worries you about, because, like, I don't really know much about her. I know the Food Babe is crazy,
yeah.
but, like, I don't read her blog. Like, I'm not one of those people who's like, know your enemy, you know, and like does all this research, because that's not my focus.
Well, I guess part of the thing was that we had a similar superhero, supervillain origin story. Like, mm-hmm. I could have ended up being the Food Babe, you know, or not being the food, but, you know, I could have ended up yeah. having that same story, because
you guys could be like buddies.
We could have been BFFs braiding yeah. each other's hair every night instead of me hanging out with you in wonderful California. But but here's the, and she has such fabulous hair. Moving on. But she, what worries me is that it her story is so compelling, and it got her into such, you know, it gets her into these positions of power where she's basically, I don't know if bribing is a word, but she'll find an ingredient that sounds innocuous, or that is innocuous and sounds pernicious to people that don't know science. And it's very easy to sell that to people that don't understand what's going on. And I, once upon a time, even though I am scientifically versed, fell for it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, if it's easy for someone like me to fall for it, how easy is it for people who don't know it, or who have not seen all the science, to fall for it? So that's kind of why I started going after her, because I'm like, okay, I have worked in this industry, because she goes after pesticides and she says everything organic's better. And organic uses...
Hopper's an organic pesticide.
Exactly. It's like rotenone and pyrethrums are organic pesticides too. And she picks and chooses what science she decides she's going to use.
Oh, don't you hate it? It's like when creationists try to make scientific arguments for things, and you're like, you're not allowed to use science.
It's like, oh, that's so cute.
Like, that's not fair. That's mine.
Oh, it's like, oh, you think science is a thing for you now. Yeah. It's, you're using that word. You don't know what that means. Inconceivable. Moving on. But it's just, it's so cute when she tries to science hard, because she doesn't do it very well. But
yeah.
it's like, the things she does are much more pernicious than I think people understand, because she presents herself as a health advocate. And I understand why people are seeking out health advocates, because it does, you know, it's like, we do have a bit of a problem with obesity. We do have, you know, things that look like we're getting less healthy as time goes on.
Yeah, we're living longer. We
yeah,
have better medicine.
Exactly.
So people are dying of cancer and Alzheimer's yeah. and Parkinson's at a higher rate, or at least it feels like it's a higher rate, because we're fucking living long enough to get those things.
We're not dying of polio.
Exactly. We're not dying of just like
getting kicked in the face by a horse.
Yes, of like accidents, or like of an infection that penicillin could cure.
Yeah, and that's one of the best examples. Like, I think it was either World War One. One of the biggest causes of death was opportunistic infection mm-hmm. and diarrhea. We're
not
dying of that anymore.
Can you imagine if we lived in a world where, I mean, we do live in a world where millions of people die of diarrhea, but like, if we lived in a situation where like, in first world countries, it's so funny because people are so quick to forget. I remember one time getting in a Twitter argument, or maybe it was a Facebook argument, with a follower who was like, didn't believe me about the Spanish flu. And then
I
was like,
millions.
I know. And he was just like, I don't understand. How does the flu kill people? And
oh,
I'm like,
Jesus.
The flu kills people in America too, dude. And he's like, I got the flu once and I don't think it would have killed me. And I was like, oh
no,
my God.
No, you got a cold.
I know.
You got
and
a
even if you
cold.
Had the flu, like, I've had the flu. It's fucking horrible. And you feel like you're going to die, first of all. And if we didn't have good medicine, and we didn't have ways to stay hydrated and ways to be able to, you know, get antivirals if we needed them, or even if we can't access antivirals to take all the supportive meds, like the things that, you know, like Mucinex, like guaifenesin, things that'll bring mucus up, or allergy medicine to dry up all of the histamine. Like, people just don't get it. They're of course you can fucking die from the flu. It's really dangerous.
Approximately, and I mean, it depends on the year, but I went through an average out the last, give or take, 10 years or so for flu deaths, and it's about 31,000 people per year die from the flu.
That's a lot.
31,000. So I look at it and go, you know, sometimes the flu shot has different strains that are more or less effective, but, you know, do you want to get your, it's like you'll hear people say, well, it's only 60% effective. I'm like, oh, only 60%. Do you want it to drop to zero
I know.
By not getting your flu shot? What? What? And then you'll
and
hear...
And it's, again, they don't understand biology, so they don't understand why it's only 60% effective. It's, because viruses mutate and change, and we're trying to stay ahead of the game.
It's almost like it's evolution.
but yeah, it is this crazy viewpoint of like, I don't know. Well, I've never been sick, and I live in a first world country. So
can you imagine if people like it's if we have the same type of medical like if, in a modern world where we have iPhones and all these other things, if we only had the medicine of 100 years ago? Hey, Bob's not in the office today. Why not? Did you hear he died of diarrhea?
Yeah,
like that's
just watch the Nick. Yeah. If you want to know what it was like at the turn of the century, watch the Nick and think about how different it is today.
Yeah, you got your new braces in. Yeah, that polio was rough. Yeah. Like, it's crazy what things were like. And I think people are just, we're just that far removed from what it was like to have these diseases that people don't remember. Like, my mom remembers polio. My mom, she was a teacher, and for a while she worked as a school district tutor. We had somebody who hadn't gotten their polio shots in the area that she was tutoring her son. And I remember her walking with a limp and half her face was paralyzed. And I had only seen one person who was like that. And she had a mild case of polio. Mild.
Yeah. Like, so this is the exact reason that most baby boomers and older, so like grandparents and older parents, are not anti-vax.
Yep.
Because they saw what vaccines had done for people. It's a new wave, younger mommy thing to be anti-vax because you've never seen the devastating effects.
Like people like your age and my age, our parents were old enough to see it. Mm-hmm. So they know. It's people who, like, I'm not sure what age it is exactly.
I think it's probably early 40s now. Yep. It's like the post-millennial Gen X and younger, or maybe even Gen Y and younger.
Yep. It's like they have parents that didn't see it or something.
Or no, maybe their parents saw it, but they themselves never saw it firsthand, so they don't believe it.
And it's like, I've actually seen somebody who dealt with polio, and it's like, I'm like, holy shit, this is why we need to vaccinate everyone.
And for me, I don't have any firsthand experience. It's not anecdotal for me. I know nobody in my life who had polio, but I trust the science.
Yeah.
And I when I read history books, and things are corroborated across, you know, thousands of historians, I go like, wow, that probably actually did happen.
And I've had one really bad flu in my life. Well, I mean, I think I've probably had more than one flu, but there was one really atrocious flu. I was coughing up blood for 6 weeks.
Ooh, that is bad.
I mean, at the time, I grew up without insurance. I think my parents finally coughed up $200 to bring me to the doctor, but it was like... when people say, well, I got the flu, I just put peppermint oil on my feet and it went away. I'm like, that's a cold.
That's not the flu. Yeah, I had a flu once when I was in college where I couldn't get out of bed. My roommate had to drag me to the car and take me to the clinic. And when I got there, they took my pulse and my resting pulse was 130.
Holy
crap. And they were like, we have to put you on an IV fluids. Like, your pulse is too high. You're not hydrated enough. Like, Jesus. It's one of those things where you can't drink water because every time you try to drink water, you throw it up. Oh. So you're taking Tylenol suppositories to get your fever down.
Oh my God.
And you have to get an IV flush. Like, and same thing with you. Like, you were probably suffering more from
respiratory.
And for me, I was suffering from, I don't know, some sort of systemic horrible thing that just, I was weak, my joints hurt, you know, all the typical malarial flu-like symptoms.
Yeah, and people look at you and go, well, you just had a bad one. I'm like, no, that's the flu is like. And
which is why since then I get a flu shot every year. And I actually am lucky enough that I've never had the flu in a year when I got a flu shot.
Yeah.
Some people still do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to say, like, but my risk was mitigated.
I would rather get the flu shot, reduce my risk, and never, and say, you know what, if I get the flu, I would rather say I took every precaution. I took every precaution. But then when I occasionally see websites saying, here's how you can protect yourself against the flu, and it's a list of vitamins.
Or you get these people, this is so common, I'll tweet something like, I just got my flu shot, and then I'll have people say, oh, well, then I guess you're guaranteed to get the flu tomorrow. And you're like, okay, first of all, flu shots don't cause the flu. Like, ever. Like, under any circumstances, would you getting a dead virus?
If you get the flu shot and the next day you have the flu, because
you already had the flu.
The incubation period means that thing was just TikTok.
Yeah, you already had the flu because it's fucking flu season.
Exactly.
It's a fluke. Yeah. Or... you get the flu shot and you have some sort of immune response to it because some people do, and you feel sort of crummy for a day. It's not that you got a weak flu. Ugh. It's that you had an immune response. It's not uncommon. You fucking suffer through it.
Ugh.
It's like, it hurts your arm when you get a tetanus shot, but I'd rather not get lockjaw. I don't want to die of lockjaw.
It's just not sexy.
It's not
a look I can rock. I can't say fuck as well if my jaw is locked up.
You really can't.
It would make me sad.
And also you die.
Yeah, the dying part is it's not something I can abide by. It would make it very hard to keep writing incendiary things about bad people.
It'd be really tough. So. And again, how many people you know that have had tetanus?
I don't think I don't know someone who's had tetanus. No. You want to know why the tetanus shot works?
Exactly.
That's why.
We were mandated to fucking take it when we're like 12 years old, or probably in our baby stuff too. I don't even know.
You know, it's funny. The last fall, because I started my website in 2014, and there was a CDC quiz to help you figure out if you needed certain boosters or what your schedule was.
Oh, shit, I should do that.
And it's a great little quiz. I'll shoot it over to you later.
Yeah.
Or if you just Google CDC quiz for vaccines, it'll pop right up.
Cool.
And I had posted it on my site, and I took it, and I realized I was behind on a few boosters, one of which was the MMR. At the time, I lived in Anaheim and had an annual Disney pass. I was at Disney on the days of the outbreak.
And you hadn't had your MMR?
No, I'd gotten it 2 months before.
Thank
so
goodness.
It's like the thought that I could have, like, and I mean, there's a chance that I was, you know, not that far. Like, there was a chance that I still had immunity, but
yeah.
Still.
Or even that you could have gotten a weak case and you could have treated it, you know, because most people don't die anymore of measles, but it's fucking horrible.
I would rather not have the measles.
I know. I don't want to catch a disease that I can die from. And I just as much don't want to catch a disease that will make me wish I were dead.
Yeah. You want to know what's horrifying? After the, you know, the new law that's passed in California saying you need to get your vaccines before you go into public school.
Yeah, that the exemptions aren't really going to hold water anymore the way that they used to.
Dr. Bob Sears, the one who wrote, quote unquote, the vaccine book. In other words, the here's how you get an alternative schedule, because he's a scoundrel.
This is how you fucking use a loophole?
Yeah, he wrote on his Facebook page that basically he's willing to, like, you know, if you do, you can come into his office and get an exemption somehow. He's still trying to help parents get exemptions.
That's so just gross.
These people are just scoundrels.
They really are. They're fucking huge dangers to public health.
And it's, they present themselves as being so caring to parents. I'm like, no, if you were caring, you would explain the science. You would stop speaking, and they'll always say to your face that they're not anti-vax. No, you know what not anti-vax means? It means explaining to parents how vaccines work. It means explaining that they're safe, and it means giving them the vaccines on the accurate and scientifically proven schedule, and stop being such a scoundrel and speaking out against vaccines on Facebook. Try doing that, and then we'll call you pro-vaccine.
Exactly. Like, but promote vaccines.
Yeah.
And maybe only try to counsel people against vaccines if you have established that their child has an albumin allergy.
Yes.
Or that they have cystic fibrosis and can't handle a vaccine, you know, like, exactly. Or whatever the fuck. They have leukemia and it's not the right time to get vaccinated.
It's like I had a coworker at my last job who had a heart transplant, and he, because of the immunosuppressants he was on, he couldn't take certain vaccines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I look at that and go, get vaccinated for Jim.
Yes, that's the thing. It's the people who are, they're so anti-vax, and then they use these people as an example, and you're like, that argument is my argument, your argument.
Exactly. It's like, I don't think vaccines should be mandated for everyone across the board, because if you do that, it means that, you know, it means that there are certain people who absolutely cannot. But we should say everyone who can be vaccinated should be vaccinated,
because they rely on our herd immunity.
Exactly.
And like, I might sound like a fucking socialist when I say this, but I'm willing to take one for the team.
I'm okay with it. And it's funny, because I go on libertarian podcasts every once in a while, and they say, you know, what about, you know, how is it not socialist to do this? I'm like, well, you have the I'm like, a lot of libertarians have the non-aggression principle. I'm like, your right to swing your fist ends at my face. Your right to swing your germ-ridden bullshit ends at my immune system. Okay.
Yeah.
And if there is a shot, a harmless shot, a proven harmless shot that you can take that's going to prevent that, why wouldn't you give that as a gift to your child?
Yeah.
And it's like, the hardest part about the anti-vax movement, I think, is that it's not hurting the person who chooses it, it's hurting their children.
Yeah, because most of these anti-vaxxers got to benefit from being vaccinated by their own parents.
Yep. It's, do you remember, it's Dr. Sherry Tenpenny?
I don't know any of these people. I'm learning so much on this podcast.
So Sherry Tenpenny, she's one of the nutty anti-vax doctors.
I feel like they talked about her on SGU before.
Yeah,
because I'm like, Tenpenny?
I think we might have mentioned her on this. There's the conspiracy cruise that's happening right now.
Yes, yes.
I love that they actually called it the conspiracy cruise. They're like, we get it. We're nuts.
Yeah.
She's on it. And she admitted to missing almost the entire third grade because she was sick with vaccine-preventable illnesses. And she's like, well, it was very good for my immune system. I'm like, no, what about the kids that die from those types of illnesses?
Wait, so she's basically saying, like, the same argument that medical professionals are saying. If you as a child, for example, get chickenpox, you develop antibodies against chickenpox and then you won't get them again.
Yes.
But we could also give you a subclinical dose of chickenpox so that you don't have a chickenpox outbreak and now you are immune, but you didn't have to suffer through fucking having chickenpox.
But don't you get it? The mercury's going to kill you. Oh,
like, I didn't get a chickenpox vaccine because there wasn't one
back
then.
Yeah, I got
then.
Same thing. I got
chickenpox.
Same age. I got chickenpox.
And I have
it was horrible.
A scar and right in the middle of my forehead. Everybody has a chickenpox scar. They can always point to their chickenpox scar.
I have no idea if I, it's, I just have bad skin. Who
Mine's,
knows?
Oh, shut up. I'm sure like everybody, oh, that's where my chickenpox were. That's where I have one in the middle of my forehead. It's like a little crater.
I got them when I was 3. So maybe my skin.
Yeah, you might've been
back.
Really young. Like, I got it twice. You're not even supposed to be able to do that.
Holy
I got
shit.
It, gave it to my sister. And as I was healing and she was full on, she like fucking gave it back to me.
My older brother got it when, because he 3 years older, he was in school, he came home and gave it to me and I was 3, and I have a long, whenever I get illnesses I get them a little worse than whoever gave them to me.
That sucks.
Like my
your body hates you.
Oh
basically.
Yeah, my body just is like fuck you. But like my brother got it, came home, and like he had an okay case of it. I had them in my mouth, between my toes and my ears. It was, and I mean I don't remember because I was 3, but my mom said I was pretty miserable.
I remember like oatmeal baths and what's the pink stuff?
Calamine lotion.
Calamine lotion.
Oh, yeah.
Just dumping just whole bottles everywhere. Of calamine lotion in the bathtub and just being like, can I sleep here tonight?
But,
like,
but the thing,
horrible.
The thing that people do need as adults is getting their, what's the shingles vaccine.
It's the same.
It's like a 14, I think the way Paul Offit, Dr. Offit explained it, it's like a 14 times higher dose of the same exact thing, and it gives you an immunity to the shingles to the shingles infection, and it's
because we're all carrying it already.
Yep. And one day it can pop up, and it's my boyfriend's aunt had shingles recently, and it's like it didn't look comfortable.
Well, and just think about all the things we deal with when we're kids. Like, it's a difference between like when a kid learns to skateboard when he's 8 and then like a 55-year-old is skateboarding, and like you can't eat it the way you used to because your body doesn't recover. No. And things are like, and also you don't have the same schedule as you when you were a kid. You'd be like, oh, out of school and it sucked, but like it was kind of awesome. And as an adult, when you can't work, it like can destroy your livelihood.
Yeah, it's, I mean, being at home on the couch for a few days when you're an adult, it's just not the same.
It's not the same. It's like the emails are piling up. Like, the work doesn't actually stop.
No, no, it doesn't.
And when you're a kid, the school doesn't stop, but like, you'd think it does.
You and I run our own businesses. Like, it never stops. I miss work for an hour, and I'm like, where did 27 emails come from?
Oh my God, that's the worst. When you look down and you're like, nope, you just put it right back in your pocket.
I'm like, uh-uh. It's, I just give my finger to the phone sometimes. I'm like, not looking at it, not right now, can't do it.
The worst. So I have to ask, you know, we've been talking about food, babe, we've been talking about this kind of branch of skepticism, which is I think a really important one, is kind of advocacy for public health and trying to understand where the charlatans are, how we focus on them. So your blog, obviously, tell everybody where they can read the stuff that you do.
Let's see. So of course there's scibabe.com is my own website. I also, right now I'm writing at cosmopolitan.com. My old editor from Gawker went over to there, so that's where a lot of my stuff is. And my old editor is going to be moving possibly to a new site, so we'll see, and I'll obviously announce that soon. But right now I'm at Cosmo, and I'm going to be continuing to there. And I think it's kind of fun that I'm writing at a women's magazine, because you need to combat the woo where it is. So,
oh yeah, and preaching to the choir is not that effective. Like, it's much more interesting to actually go to places where the people aren't as informed.
Exactly. So, I mean, and we're not saying that women aren't as informed who read
no,
there.
No, it's
just, but
it's less likely that they're going to be heavily in the skeptic movement.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's great that, I mean, my first article there was Why Your Detox is Bullshit.
Yeah, nice.
And I mean, it got shared like over 70,000 times.
So
it was
great.
A huge article. And they love me at Cosmo now, because they're like, this is great. Women are reading this stuff. And they needed that information.
Well, because
so.
All they're getting fed to them all over and over is, this is a great juice cleanse.
Yeah,
and this is going to make your ass tighter.
But,
and
yeah, and it's like, you know, it's, here's the thing. I think there's a time and a place for that. And I think it's, you know, it's Cosmo, you know, it's, I think it's fun. I think I was a huge fan of the magazine when I was a teenager, and it's wonderful that Cosmo is looking at this, seeing there's an audience for it, and letting themselves grow because they see that people want this information. So I think it's a great little marriage between my writing and Cosmo's audience. And I hope that they keep doing it, because I think reaching people people where they are mm-hmm. is important. So,
it so is.
You know, putting the humor out there and getting to a new audience type other than just, I like to say I preach skepticism to non-skeptics. Like, here's how you can get a little bit of skepticism into your everyday life. And it's, I mean, that's, I also have a book coming out later this year. It's Cybabe's 10 Rules to BS Detection.
Love it.
And it's going to be fun. It's kind of one of my favorite rules in it. I think I said this on the SGU podcast too, is the Star Wars rule. And I'm wearing my little droid dress too.
Oh, you
too.
Are! R2-D2.
My little R2-D2 dress. And it's if they try to say it's better because it's from a place long, long ago and far, far away. There are so many times that they'll say things are better because they're older.
Oh, yeah, because they used to use this in ancient China.
Exactly. So it's, you know, traditional Chinese medicine, or, you know, GMOs are bad because they banned them elsewhere. And
or because way back when we started farming, we didn't have transgenics.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like, there are so many things that they try to say are bad because they're new. And it's like, and I think the thing that inspired this was, I mentioned this on SGU too, but it's like the thing that inspired this, I saw this article and I'm like, I have a new idea for my book. Like, it was perfect. They try, and I can shoot this article. It was this crazy little brewed up thing saying, this is the most powerful antibiotic on earth. And it came from medieval Europe, from a time and place when they had all sorts of plagues. Put on your skeptic cap.
Yeah.
What's wrong with this picture? People died of the plague. So
there were no treatments for
it. Because obviously this shit didn't work.
And so, do you know when the plague started actually getting under control? When people started washing their hands.
Exactly. Wash your fucking hands. And then one day we learn. Because now people still get the plague. We still occasionally
get. Oh, yeah. Bubonic plague is a real thing.
Oh, yeah. And I believe we get like a death or so every year in like the desert from, you know, because they're the fleas on prairie dogs and puppy dogs still carry them.
Oh, yeah. It's prairie dogs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it ever from raccoons
and
rats?
I'm
I think
not
it's prairie
sure.
dogs.
The last, because I had to read up on this last year because there were a few deaths from the bubonic plague.
It's a big vector.
I think somewhere in the Southwest was where it happened. I don't want to quote this incorrectly. Because
it's probably either the Southwest or the Midwest, like prairie dog country, grasslands.
Yeah, I mean, the treatment for it is a long course of antibiotics. And it's so, I mean, once we got real antibiotics and not something that you brewed up from Europe from a couple centuries ago, we could treat this. So when people say it's better because it's from a long time ago, that's a really bad argument. So, I mean, like the way I broke things down in my book is here's how you can see something on social media or in marketing. And it's kind of like, because I know there's been the Carl Sagan baloney detection kit. And I know other people have done, you know, these types of here's how you can tell if this is bullshit before. And I kind of geared it towards, you know, the social media and the marketing age we're in now.
Yeah, like the listicles, like the BuzzFeed listicles.
Yeah. And it goes into a lot of depth and it gives examples and debunks a few things here and there, but it's very, here's how, if something's presented to you, you can look at it and ask these questions to figure out if you're being fed a line of shit or not.
Which is so important because people ask me that all the time. It's kind of the number one question that I get within the skeptic circles is like, how do you tell if a study is valid? How do you tell if this claim is supported by science? It's not that easy because there's so much pseudoscience and pseudo-journalism out there. So they use the scientific terms, they use the big words, it sounds legitimate, and it's really hard if you don't have a background in it.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you do, like you and I were saying, like I sometimes get taken by something where I'm like, that sounds like it could work.
Yep. And it's funny. Like one of the things I did, one of the rules was if they use correlation and causation interchangeably, which of course I had to go into.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like one of the things I went after was does diet soda cause weight change? And there was a great article, and by great, I mean horrible, that said a Diet Coke will cause you to gain 7 pounds in a year. Of course, the article
just arbitrarily.
It just says it's going to make you gain 7 pounds. I'm like, well, that sounds like bullshit because I've been drinking diet soda for a while and I don't weigh 8,000 pounds.
You know, calculating.
Just seven. But I read it and I found the study that came with it, and they were measuring how many calories people ate in correspondence with different types of drinks, and they went with alcohol, coffee drinks, diet soda, and tea, and they were also measuring the calories in the drinks. And alcohol had they were calling them discretionary calories, so like things above and beyond just the meals, you know, snacks and whatnot. So the alcohol had the highest number of calories in the alcohol itself. It was like 300. The coffee drinks had, you know, including cream and sugar, like 100 some odd calories. Now the two non-calorie drinks, I believe the diet soda they were only having 69 discretionary calories, and the tea had 64 discretionary calories. But the article in, I think it might have been Shape magazine, there was no mention of the tea, the alcohol, or the coffee drinks. They just said Diet Coke will make you gain 7 pounds.
Of course.
There was, and I mean, why? And it's just because artificial sweeteners make people lose their shit. So I looked at that and went, why is this the one that's being demonized? So, yeah. And I mean, I get it. You know, you shouldn't live on Diet Coke. I drink mainly, like, the thing that's in my purse right now is because I'm really conscious of getting, making sure my electrolytes are stable because I work out a lot. Mm. Like, I just have water with Noon tablets in it because I love the flavor of Noon tablets. They're just
a Noon tablet.
It's Nuun. They're little instant electrolyte tablets, and I like the way they taste.
Interesting.
They're little runner.
I don't like flavored water.
They're little runner tablets that I love. They're great little instant electrolyte tablets.
They're like lemon flavored.
Yeah.
Stuff?
Well, these are lemon flavored. Like,
yeah,
they have,
hate flavored water.
Oh, okay.
It's super gross.
I used to have a bit more of a Diet Coke addiction. I maybe have like one a day now.
I have
a
regular Coke addiction. Ah! Not like Coke, but like Coca Cola.
Coca-Cola.
It's really bad.
Well, it's if you only have. Here's the thing.
Not in moderation.
It doesn't look like it's affecting your weight. So anything that you have with it. Oh, shush you. You look fabulous. Shush.
Go on.
I just thought it was so funny that they didn't concentrate on, like, and they said in the original study, diet soda drinkers drank less. But I thought it was hilarious that they didn't say, you know, tea drinkers will gain 6.5 pounds. It was just diet soda.
Well, it's like the bacon increases your risk for cancer bullshit. And then when you actually calculate on a risk-benefit analysis, we're talking about increasing your risk above and beyond a normal risk of background cancer causes of something like 0.07. Like, it was some, like, non... Yeah.
It's so funny because people are scared to death of glyphosate, even though there doesn't seem to be any actual increased risk of cancer. And it's because it's linked to GMOs and people
are
really
nervous.
Exactly.
Sure, it's Roundup.
It's, you know, just yell Monsanto when it means you're right, obviously. Mm-hmm. And people are nervous about that. But suddenly people got an understanding of statistical analysis when somebody said something bad about bacon.
Yeah. And then there's like all these like basically Nate Silver sounding articles about, wait a minute. I still want to have my
It's like, go ahead, eat your bacon. It's fine.
So true.
But Roundup really is funny. The devil. I just thought it was the funniest week on the internet ever.
I loved that week. I was like, ooh, skepticism. I love it.
It's everyone turned into skeptics in one week because of bacon.
Because of their bacon. I don't want to lose my bacon.
I don't take away my bacon.
Yeah. It's going to make me wise up really fast.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we are like kind of running over.
Yeah.
And so
we've been talking for a while.
Yeah. So you told us where your work is, but how can people find you specifically?
Let's see. Over at facebook.com/SciBabe. SciBabe.com obviously is the website. And if you want to hunt down my random and ridiculous tweets, I'm at the SciBabe. And if you feel like seeing pictures of my dog, same thing. Instagram is at the SciBabe.
I love it. All right. Well, Yvette, thank you so much. Or should I call you a SciBabe?
Just go with Yvette.
Thank you so much for joining me. This was so much fun.
Right? We should do this again.
Totally should. And everybody else, thank you for tuning in week after week. I'm looking forward to the next time we all get together and talk nerdy.